You're listening to a sermon from New Harvest Church in Salem, Oregon. We believe that you were created for connection to Christ and a community of his followers. This sermon is an extension of our desire to become more like Christ by engaging God's word within our weekly gatherings. If you are in the area, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday. You can learn more about New Harvest and our ministries at newharvestch.org.
That was a good amount of time to be able to say hello to each other and see a little bit about our lives and share. And I'm really glad for the message from Tyler that you that were online heard about learning more about the church and connecting. We know that there's so many that are saying, hey, I'm checking in with New Harvest online Sunday after Sunday, and thank you. Thank you for doing that. And we want really you to be blessed in every way that God has in mind. And welcome, everyone. How about this kind of greeting? Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, that's good. And it's a nice group here today. And we're enjoying both the opportunity to be in the auditorium and also the chance to connect electronically online. Our connection card is something we're still using right here, y'all. And we have a plastic bin there on your way out if you want to drop a connection card in there with a prayer request or maybe you have a question of the staff, things like that. The same can happen through what Tyler shared online with a link called Connect. All right, here we are. Welcome to our third installment of sharing about Psalm 23. A psalm that we know so well. But isn't it marvelous? Psalm 23 is marvelous. It's so rich. Each and every word seemed to have some kind of meaning and significance to us. And so I'm glad that we're doing it. I felt led of God to do it. And it's enriching to my soul. And I'm sure it is to yours. Now, every Sunday so far, I've read a rendition of Psalm 23. That was more creative in nature. But this time I'd like to do the paraphrase from the Message translation. And many of you are familiar with the Message paraphrase from Eugene Peterson. And so here we go. It's on the screen. And listen to these words. God, my shepherd, I don't need a thing. You have bedded me down in lush meadows. You find me quiet pools to drink from. True to your word, you let me catch my breath and send me in the right direction. Even when the way goes through Death Valley, I am not afraid when you walk at my side. Your trusty shepherd's hook makes me feel secure. You serve me a six-course dinner right in front of my enemies. You revive my drooping head, my cup brims with blessing. Your beauty and love chase after me every day of my life. I'm back home in the house of God for the rest of my life. There it is, the Message paraphrase. And I think that it's really great to kind of personalize Psalm 23. I have an assignment for you. I would like you to take this week some time, contemplate prayerfully, creatively, and write out your own paraphrase of Psalm 23. And guess what? I'm not just giving you an assignment. I will do it also. Paraphrase it. Put it in your own words. I think it will be enriching for you, and I'm planning on doing it. Now, next Sunday's rendition will be the one you're most familiar with, the one that's been around for over 400 years, the King James Version from 1611. And so that'll be the way to cap off this series as we read that translation. Well, where have we been? I have a little summary that I put in your notes. We are doing a bulletin these days, and the backside of the bulletin is the notes for Sunday's this message. And here's my summary. We are not alone on our journey. We have the Lord as our shepherd who fills us up and leads us on our way. There is no more satisfying walk than this. However, this does not mean the road is easy. You need to emphasize that last summary statement. However, that does not mean the road is easy. And that's where we are today. We have progressed to verse 4, and verse 4 is clearly telling us that the road can be challenging. And you don't have to really be too in-depth at interpreting what this means. You know it, and you can see that it's the more difficult road. Here we go, verse 4. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That's verse 4. It's right at the heart of Psalm 23. We can identify with it. It's where we get to land today. And most people would suggest that verse 4 is the key to the whole verse. It's why David wrote Psalm 23, because he was remembering or experiencing a valley in his own life. And these truths were what kind of surfaced in his heart as he wrote Psalm 23, knowing that God would help him through. Now, I see two key words that you might miss, but they're right in verse 4, and they really kind of shape the whole psalm in my thinking. It's the word though and through. Though and through. Same word, right? Except for one letter, one little letter, and yet the meaning of the words is quite different. So my title, not though, but through. Now, you might not know this, but in American Sign Language, the letter R has kind of a unique symbolism in sign language. You take your middle finger and you put it over your index finger, and that's the R. That's kind of interesting. And we're going to use this symbol today to kind of remind us of what we're talking about. But originally, the idea of this cross finger predates American Sign Language. It was in the early church, during the time when Christianity was illegal and there was persecution and difficulty. Guess what? Christians had kind of a, how do we identify ourselves with each other? How do we kind of recognize each other without kind of saying much, but, you know, supporting each other on the road? And they would have this symbol like that. Isn't that interesting? The crossed fingers, which makes sense because what they were saying is that I'm a person of the cross, a person of the cross. And that was like in the beginning days of our faith and the early church. And so I'm a person of the cross. And yet you think of this symbol and I think of this symbol as something different, right? If we have our own emojis, you probably use it sometimes when you're texting people. You'll put that and you'll mean good luck, have a good day, or something like that. I hope all things go well. And where would we get this idea that the symbol is about good luck? Well, the symbol was used a little bit beyond greeting, where then it became kind of a symbol of dependence on God, like, God, I need your help, or God, protect me. It was sort of like, it really had a sense, a spiritual meaning behind it. But you know, over time, some of these significant symbols that mean something good and strong and deep kind of get watered down. So if we're asking God to help us or protection and everything, and we kind of, that gets watered down, then what do we say? Good luck. I hope it goes well. And that's really how we got to this symbol to have that meaning. But today, I want to go back to that R in through, and I want the meaning to be getting through. That's what I'd like, getting through. So anytime I use it this morning, I'm going to be kind of pointing to getting through. I'll probably say it at the same time. So here we go. We're not going to start with through. We're going to start with though. Though. The word though is the even though part points to the challenges that are lurking around every corner in life. There's a challenge coming your way this afternoon. There's a challenge coming your way on Monday. There's a challenge that could be like a valley. Though I walk in a valley is the idea. Though I walk in a valley. Now, in Israel, there's an actual place referred to as the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And I have a picture for you. And this picture has kind of an interesting structure in it, and that's a monastery. And that wasn't there when David was around. It came later. And they built a monastery, maybe a sense of inspiration about the meaning of this Valley of the Shadow of Death. And it's steep, and it's deep, and it's narrow. And in this particular valley, the sun never hits the bottom directly, only when it is high noon. That's it. Only just for a short time. The rest of the time, the canyon is dark. And you get the connection right away. And people believe that David probably journeyed his sheep through this particular valley. Well, nonetheless, he knew of that valley, and it was personal to him. And when he used it in this psalm, he was using something that Hebrews would know right away, that he's talking about a difficult thing, a valley. A valley refers to rough times, tough times, hard times, all right? And in the Bible, we'll have references to the valley, like Joshua refers to the valley of calamity. And then in Psalm 84, we learn about the valley of weeping. And the prophet Hosea talked about the valley of trouble. And so it's not hard. We get that. This idea of a valley of trouble is how I'm going through a valley. When we say that, we know what we're talking about. Well, say this, we're all familiar with going through a valley. Your valley could have been something like disability, or your valley could be poverty or abandonment. You might have even dug your own valley with alcohol and drugs, or pride and arrogance, or selfishness and retaliation. Those can dig a valley in your life. And then the situations expand so we can all relate to sorrow and sickness, those kind of things, or difficulties, disappointments, and even the reality of death in our world. This can be true. We can feel fatigued and frustrated and feel like a failure, and this can be like a valley to us. All of this can represent a valley. The even though, verse 4, really is something we can understand easily, because valleys in life are inevitable and they're difficult. And guess what? We're going through a valley. No one would deny that. We could all relate to the fact that when I suggest to you that we're walking through a valley, you would say, yes, we are. And it makes sense, because this is unprecedented, as we've used that word many times, and this is especially difficult. And we might even say, how long, Lord? How long? And if you do that, you're right in step with David again, because in Psalm 13, David four times says, Lord, how long are these thoughts? How long are these enemies? How long is my disappointment? How long? And so we're going to do Psalm 13 this week, because most of us would suggest that going through this pandemic has been long. And how long, Lord? Well, we don't know. So we can relate to it. How long is the valley? And here we are. But when I think about the phrase valley of the shadow of death, it's intriguing to me, because the word shadow isn't even in the original text. It's more of an idiom in the understanding of how a shadow casts when there's darkness and death around. And so when you think of a shadow, in many ways, it can be scary. I remember as a kid and seeing a shadow on the wall, and it looked like enormous, and it was kind of scary to me. So shadow, what about shadow? What does shadow have to say with us? Well, I was thinking about this interesting kind of connection of shadow, and here's some of the thoughts I had. Shadows are always bigger than reality. All right, that's an important one to put down. Fear can be greater than the actual problem. Is that true? That's true, isn't it? Our fear can be greater than the actual problem. It can kind of build up in our mind like a shadow seems bigger than the real thing. Now, taking from that, shadows cannot hurt you. And shadows are image without substance and seemingly dark and seemingly scary, but they can't hurt you. And finally, there is no shadow without a light somewhere, right? And that's so important to know. It's just a sense of an analogy here that when you're walking through a valley like we are right now, when you are tempted to be afraid, I want you to turn away from the shadow. Don't stare at the shadow. And I want you to look back at the light. And guess what happens to the shadow? It falls behind. Now, this is an analogy to get us thinking about where we need to go with really the progress of Psalm 23. Where I don't want to be in though anymore. Do you? I don't want to be the though person. I want to be the through person. Ready? Getting through. Here we go. Through is really the message of verse 4. It's the desire of David. He's teaching us the way through. And it spills from verse 3. In verse 3, and he guides us on the right path for his name's sake. This is, it comes right from there. And then David picks it up. He's going to go, the Lord knows the right path. Even if it's going through a dark valley, you can trust him all the way through. And it begins this way. No fear. No fear. With this phrase, I will fear no evil. We know that one. And when we read that, evil might have a meaning to us that we think of as kind of like more on the idea of the devil. And that could be true. But the word evil is this kind of the unexpected, uncertain, common problems in a fallen world. Evil. It could really, as one translation put it, mean harm. I will fear no harm. Evil can be this kind of broader sense. I fear no harm. And so the emphasis here, I will, with a determination statement, I will fear no evil. I will not fear. One translation, I will not be afraid, is the idea of facing fear, moving forward in faith. It really is a statement of courage. I'm not going to shrink back. I'm not going to let fear dominate. I'm going to face my fears. I'm not suggesting that we never are afraid. I just don't want us to pretend that we aren't. Let's face our fears, move forward, admit it to be so, and let the sense of what God is about rise up. Our true friendship with God, the Almighty. See, with true friendship with the Lord, nothing, no fear, nothing through the darkest valley, we don't have to fear anything. That's what I want to say. And that's the idea. So God is accompanying us. And well, I was thinking about, I will not be afraid. And that sense of determination and certainty, I was drawn to a text in the New Testament, a passage in the New Testament. You're familiar with this one. It's in Romans 8. In verse 37, it says this statement, "No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us." We are more than conquerors. I thought of that verse. And when I thought of these things, I know that what Paul, the Apostle Paul, was writing, he was writing about challenging things, difficult things. Even if we're thrown to the slaughter, it says, it's pretty intense. Even in all these difficult and dark things, these valleys, let's be more than conquerors through him who loved us. And then the amazing verses, "For I'm convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." I'm convinced. That's what he says. I am courageous, more than conquerors. I am not alone. I am getting through. No fear. That's the idea. Face those fears. And with the accompanying of God's presence in your life, that's next, we move forward. That's it. You, number two, are with me. You, God, my shepherd, are with me. And the way that David started this, remember, the Lord is my shepherd. So personal. But here, in verses 1 through 3, he is addressing God with this manner. He makes me. He leads me. He refreshes my soul. He uses the third person pronoun in this. So, but look what changes in verse 4. Here it is. It jumps out. I mean, it can jump. It jumped out at me. You. Now we're making a personal connect. You are with me. And that David is now. Let's transition. We know this about God. We can know a lot about God and what he does and how great he is. And but to know God personally, that's what made the difference in going through the valley. Now when the rubber meets the road, when the challenge gets the most intense, when the difficulty is undeniable, you, personal, connection, this idea of walking with God and his presence with us is one of the best promises of the Bible. It's really, just think, the God of the universe chooses to be with us. So I was thinking about different times when it was affirmed, God told Moses in Exodus 33:14, my presence will be with you. And guess what? There wasn't anything that was too satisfying to Moses until that. He had a lot of excuses, but then when God said, my presence will be with you, Moses was satisfied. That's what he needed. How about God talking to Joshua, and he says this, as I was with Moses, so I'll be with you. And what happened in Joshua's life? He had incredible courage. What didn't happen previously happened through Joshua and the people of God. They moved forward with courage. Why? Because they knew God was with them. Our prophet Isaiah, he affirms this truth time and again. Like in Isaiah 43, it says, do not fear for, nope, that's not it. This is the one. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. When you, the waters flood, I will be with you. Isaiah 43. Isaiah 41 says, do not fear, for I am with you. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will strengthen you and help you. I'll uphold you with my righteous right hand. There it is. And Jesus, the very last thing Jesus says in the Gospel of Matthew is, surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. This is these amazing truths. I've only mentioned just four different references. Now, Psalm 23, this is key. This is the difference. When you know that the living God is with you, it changes your disposition, your outlook, your way of perceiving things. It changes it. But if you feel like you're all alone, now, that's a different matter. I've always felt like darkness was a scary thing ever since I was a kid. And if I'm walking alone in darkness, I'm not doing well. I am fearful. But if someone walks with me, I remember when I first met Wendy and it was dark and we were going on a walk and I go, man, I can't, I like this lady and I don't, young lady, and I don't want to. So I'm looking real brave in the darkness, walking with her and everything. And when I say goodbye to her, I run to my cabin because I'm fearful because I'm all alone now. Anyway, here, this promise is so important, so significant, so rooted in the companionship and presence of God that's promised is going to get us through every time. I guarantee it. You walk with God close to him, he'll take you through any valley. I know it. That's the God we have. That's who he is. That's how he works. And then rod and staff. Rod and staff. This comes right to something that David would be very familiar with, because these are the tools of the shepherd, the rod and the staff. And there's been some debate about what tool means what, and so on. What does the rod refer to? What is the staff? And are they different or the same? Well, they're obviously two different pieces of instrument or tools that the shepherd uses. But that the crucial idea isn't saying, well, what part is the rod? No, what part is, no. The crucial thing is to say what they mean. Together, they mean this. Protect. Protect. They protect the sheep from wild animals. You know what they also, they correct. They correct. That's right. The wandering sheep, correction. There's the rescue, especially seen in that crook of the staff, for example. The lost or injured sheep, rescued, guide. Definitely the rod and the staff are about guiding the sheep on the right path. And now these come to life, I hope, for you in some way or another. Protection, correction, rescuing, guiding. Now, David knew firsthand about the shepherd and his role of protecting because he did exactly that. In fact, in 1 Samuel 17, in verses 34 and 35, he's talking to Saul about being fit to face Goliath, and he says to King Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, I struck it, I rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair and struck it and killed it." Whoa, man, that's not only protection, that's a lot of courage. And David had an incredible amount of courage to face what no one else would face, Goliath, in the battle. And you know that story. Well, the protection, the rod of protection. Do you believe that about the shepherd God, that he protects you, and he protects you far more than you even realize? The protection. Now the correction. This one we want to skip over. Skip this one. But you can't, because we're prone to wander. I'm prone to wander. Sheep are prone to wander. Some sheep were especially prone to wander. And at times, guess what the shepherd would do? He'd break the leg of the sheep. Oh, my goodness, you're kidding. No, because a sheep with a limp is better than no sheep at all, you see. And so you get that. And honestly, that's the rationale. And the thing about it is, the Lord loves you so much. He loves me so much that he's not going to just let you flounder around. He might cause something to feel like a whack so that we come in connection to him and on the right path. See, correction is good for us. I need it. Rescue. Rescue. Now, this gets at, we know lots about we have a sense about the rescuing shepherd. And so I have a picture for you I thought was kind of memorable of a photo, no, painting, I should say, of a shepherd leaning over. I thought that was a bit scary. Anyway, but the shepherd was willing to go to that kind of extent. That's why I think the picture, the painting, is memorable. And it would take the crook of the staff and around the neck, or if the sheep was a younger sheep or smaller, then right around the torso and pull the sheep to safety. Isn't that great to know that the shepherd has a heart to rescue us when we're really vulnerable and everything? There was I want to show you a real life story here. And these two fellas have a role of shepherding, and that is a sheep very close to being gone. And then the next part of the picture is that they pull the sheep out. And I just saw that picture online, of course. I don't know those fellas, but they demonstrate what I think really it means to be a shepherd. And so there was just such a beautiful, fascinating story. I don't know hardly any of the details, but they're people I know. I've known them for a long time. The mother, her name's Raylene, and she was a close friend of my second child. My daughter, Carissa, has been. And their son wandered off. They were camping in a remote place. The uncles and cousins and everything, just boys. And the three-year-old wandered off. And he wandered off for 17 hours, overnight. His name is Nolan. And they thought the worst, as I did too when I heard about it and we were praying for it. But he was rescued. Amazing. When I heard about it, I don't even know Nolan. I know Raylene, and I know her husband Sean somewhat, and I know Ben Milner, the uncle, because he's one of our elders, and his boys. And I just had tears about it. That was a rescue. Our God still rescues in such a tangible, powerful way like that. So beautiful. And he guides us. Guides us. What a significant aspect of it, because guess what? I don't know what it looks like down the road. I'm not sure about tomorrow, but I want his guidance. And the staff is a thought of it, maybe the rod too, but is the prodding. I start veering off. I think over here is good. I'm going this way, God. Seems good to me. And he'll go, oh, no, you're not. No, let's go this way. So the prodding guidance. You know what we were studying and reading through Psalm 147 this week, and in one of the phrases it says, his understanding has no limit. God, the living God, his understanding has no limit. Guess what my understanding has? Limits. Lots of limits. I have limits, but God doesn't. Guess what? I would rather have his guidance than my best effort. And that's what I learned here. I see that. So the shepherd's guidance. Well, the rod and the staff. Those are beautiful and powerful, meaningful characteristics, and they really are what the shepherd is all about in your life and mine, as you have relationship with the shepherd God through his son Jesus. But it says something interesting right here. The rod and the staff will comfort you. That's kind of an interesting statement. Did you like the part when I talked about correcting and that? Did that seem comforting to you? Didn't seem comforting to me either. And being rescued right on the verge of kind of like going over the cliff, that didn't seem so comforting to me, really. So my feelings about comfort is probably what throws me off, because I'm kind of a feeling person and I want to feel comfortable. No, this is not what we're talking about. This isn't the feeling of comfort. This is about the assurance of the shepherd. You see, the assurance of the shepherd that he will protect you. The assurance of the shepherd that he will correct you. He loves you enough to correct you and discipline you. The wonder of him rescuing you from the most dire situation so that you don't really go over the cliff. And the guiding shepherd that has the best for you in mind is absolutely comforting, because it's the assurance that he will be with you and guide you and take care of you. That's what comforting is about. It's assurance. It's this trust. It's this faith. That's what brings comfort. Comfort is this contentment. Like David began the psalm, I lack nothing. That's what we're talking about. I lack nothing. I'm comforted in the fact. I'm contented in the fact. I'm assured in the fact that God, he knows the beginning from the end, and he has my best in mind. So, well, I was thinking about these things, and I was thinking about, I even put in the notes here, what about this? Protect, correct, rescue God. Is there something that God is doing in your life right now in that way? Are you appreciating the sense of protection? Are you recognizing his correction right now? Are you realizing that he has rescued you from what could have been disastrous? Have you appreciated his guidance? First of all, with some gratitude about knowing that the activity of God in your life as our shepherd God, my shepherd God. And then, past the gratitude would be contemplating what aspect of the Lord's shepherding do you need right now? Are you feeling vulnerable? Do you need his protection? Are you feeling like you're kind of on the edge of drifting? And would it really be the best for you for him to give some correction? How about, I am in a situation and I need his rescue, his deliverance. I have to, I cry out to him for it. Really? He's the shepherd God. He already knows. And are you desiring his guidance because you're not sure where to go, what next step to take? I want to just pause right here. And gratitude and asking. I want you to be able to do that. Maybe you can scribble something on those notes or have a thought. Just a few seconds here to slow down. To appreciate. To ask. So thankful. I just believe that facing fear, the assurance that God is with us, and his ministry as a shepherd to us is exactly what we need to get through. Now, this symbol is also very significant in that it was a part of the early church. And as I was thinking about it, just kind of wrapping up here, I was thinking about the cross. I'm a person of the cross. Are you a person of the cross? I'm wondering, all those listening, are you a person of the cross? And the promise of the person of the cross is that we have stepped into relationship with the good shepherd and that he laid down his life for us so that we could have life now and forever from him by faith. And every week I've used John 10. Every week I've had something from John 10, the chapter about the good shepherd, Jesus. And I want to do it again. In John 10, verse 27, look at this. These are beautiful words. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them. They follow me. That's that relationship we're talking about. I give them eternal life. They shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. That is so amazing. What a beautiful promise. So important to me. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one. That is a beautiful, strong statements of assurance that helps so much. And maybe you wonder about what many people call their greatest fear, the shadow of death. And really this idiom, shadow of death, can absolutely mean death. And facing death, as David faced death many times. And he is saying, in the context of death and darkness, I will not fear. Is that true for you? Contemplating the fact of your mortality and knowing that everyone dies, are you ready to die? Or is that just a fearful, scary, uncertain thing to you? Well, Jesus came so that we wouldn't have to be afraid to die, that we would be assured of him. We would have the assurance through relationship with Jesus Christ that we will be with him one day, and that will be the glorious, that will be the best. That's the best in mind that God has. But I just wonder, all those here, all those listening, do you have that assurance? The assurance that the good shepherd laid down his life for you and you've put your faith in him and his promise of eternal life and holding on to you now and forever. That's the beautiful promise. That's the one that lasts forever. And I don't want anybody to be uncertain about that here in this auditorium or in every living room listening. So asking the Lord, praying to him by faith, he will come into your life if you aren't sure that you have a relationship with him alone.